we see Paul, I mean, these are quite fundamental and substantial, and also questions that as of now, I do not see a textbook explaining what exactly to be done. Like you have textbooks on, how to do incremental innovation or how to do Six Sigma or etc. So this is all, the two of us used to call it the emerging practice. You see some spots where you find good practices. I'm not sure if there is even a best practice out there so that companies could really copy. The way I see it, Paul, it all traces back to The Innovator's Dilemma, that famous book written almost 20 years from now, end of the 90s, where basically the hypothesis was that in new technologies and later, a little bit later, it was called blue ocean approaches. That means shifting the set of value proposition might disrupt a company. Back then, Christensen clearly coined it towards technologies, but in the surge of business model innovation in the 2000 years, it became apparent that this is not just a technology, but also a business model. It could be disrupted. So obviously that triggered a lot of companies saying, how can we cope with the innovator's dilemma? And I think one of the first companies that actively went out was IBM, when they installed their centers for emerging business opportunities. And basically the working assumption that IBM used already back in the 2000 years was to say, let's do some stimulating, today we would call it design thinking sessions with potential customers that build on technologies, platform applications that we already have in hand. So what can we make out of it, create something new? And I think that triggered a lot of thinking coming from the software industry to other industries. So the way I see it, in the 2010 years, there was really a surge in innovation centers in different shades and forms. Some companies went for more the incubator style. That means that look for great ideas inside the company, tying into the intrapreneurship community, obviously, and trying to provide a home, a shelter for these great ideas to nurture, to grow, and obviously with the expectation to become big business. Then we also saw that companies opened up to the startups, also to the digital startups. Some industries, they have defined names like fintechs in the financial service industry or agtechs in the agriculture industry, and trying to leverage the power of these startups to combine them in an open style of innovation with the existing assets of the company, like brand name, like distribution and sales network, etc., etc. We also saw in the last years digital labs coming up, where companies are testing digital-enabled go-to-market approaches, business models like X as a service, etc. And you find, also classical innovation centers that focus on physical technologies, like the next big thing in liquid crystal displays. So I think, coming back to your question, if you allow, I would like to use this framework. Is I think companies were really quick in separating innovation horizon 3 from the core business. And there was a lot of money poured in there, but now they are facing the integration issue. So how to take back the great ideas worked out.
If I may say something, we've got coming up in question 2 something more specific about innovation labs. So we can come back to what you've indicated has been quite a lot of the changes going on. And finally, in question 3, we've got Horizon 3 and whatever needs to do. What I'd like to do is go back into this question 1, because firstly, many people saying ambidextrous, what does that mean? Dual, what does that mean? I've also heard explore, exploit. give people a little bit of a sense of what all these mean and what are they actually trying to determine that makes them or should separate the two lots of thinking that required.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So coming back to that book on the innovator's dilemma, it became apparent that companies need to do two things at the same time. They need to basically exploit the opportunities that reside within the existing business model. When it comes to innovation, this means product maintenance, adding a service here, adding a new go-to-market partnership there, but it's still within the existing business model, with known markets, with known technology, so to say. On the other hand of the extreme, you have, say, the totally new things, completely new business models or fundamental technologies that change the nature of the game, like blockchain in the financial services industry or in the agriculture industry. And this needs to be explored, since usually these approaches that are not completely digestible, to put it that way, for innovation purposes. You need to find out who is the customer, you need to develop the customer, the value proposition, et cetera, et cetera. So separating them, these two things, the exploitation within existing business model and the exploration of how new technologies can be put to market, how the new business models could be established. These two things basically are two sides of one coin that needs to be considered as a whole. And the term ambidexterity or ambidextrous organization has been set up to define these two things that both have its inherent value and needs to be looked at.
Surely, I mean, we all explore, we all exploit. Are you saying that suddenly I'm only going to be more exploiting, or I'm going to be only more exploring? What gives that sort of difference between the two when it comes to innovation? How do you see it? Because, you know, it has to be down. Because if you say, well, I'm going to be more in the exploring side, what determines whether one or the other?
I mean, a couple of factors involved here. First, if we look very practical from the allocation of innovation budgets, there's some historical figures that are saying basically historically companies spent like 70% on the exploitation side and some 10% on the exploration side and the remaining 20% on the middle, which I'm sure we'll be exploring in more depth during that conversation in here. Interestingly, there are some studies been done that these percentages are shifting. So companies, it has been shown 1.5 years ago, are only spending now like 50%, 50, in the exploitation area and spending 30% in the exploration area. So if you want to call it that way, companies are becoming more aggressive when it comes to innovation. The point that you basically touched on, Paul, is that these two fields have different logics or operating models, if you want to call them that, that tie in also with, say, levels of certainty, respectively uncertainty about what to do, how to position the innovation, that also basically pre-describe the methodology you want to use in the exploration field. There are methodologies like design thinking and lean startup that play a big, big role, whereas in the exploitation area, it's more, say, straightforward to put it that way. Also, the processes, if you look at it in the exploitation area, they are far more predictive and really many companies have been boiled down to a step one, step two, step three approach. Whereas in the exploration area, you need to be far more agile and iterative, testing, validating, going back, optimizing, etc. It's also if you look at the people side involved in here, you find different people in the exploitation area. These are the let's call it engineers or product marketeers who really know how to tweak the last inch of perfection out of what is already there. Whereas in the exploration area, you tend to find more the lateral thinkers, the T-shaped people that try to connect the dots, as Steve Jobs said.
And I also think in trying to break this down for people is, if you're a technical techo company, or yes, a startup, you're more likely to be in the exploring area because you're obviously more on the edge of a technology, you're more on the edge of a discovery. So you tend to obviously have a mindset which is far more exploratory. You're experimenting a lot more, you're open a lot more, you're discovering, you're doing a number of things. Whereas the company that's maybe more mature is certainly putting a lot more, as you say, a lot more of its funds in the exploiting, because it's saying, how do I improve my incremental product? How do I distinguish it that little bit better, that little bit more? So the mindset there needs to be stronger to say, well, we've got a good set of parameters. What we've now got to do is push those out in sort of gradual ways, or in sort of, you know, evolutionary ways still, but it's going to be far more we spend our dollar on exploit as against the explore.
So
you get comparisons between the type of companies and the situations they're in, I think, to help try and define explorer. But where does then suddenly dual pop up? Because we're taught exploit, we've taught explore, and suddenly everybody then hears the buzz dual. What is this, another sort of confusion, or how do you see that, Frank?
If I may come back to the first statement I made. So having understood that they are basically two different, let's call it, modes of innovation or playing fields, as I would like to call it, it was for many companies, it was quite easy to keep those things separate. So setting up the innovation center, smart young people in there with a lot of post-its, doing design thinking exercises and the great espresso machines in the corner, that was easy to do. But then after a couple of years, the shareholders asked me more and more, what is coming out of that exploration work? And so where dual kicks in is basically to say, well, you do have that ambidextrous, if we want to come back to that word, ambidextrous setup, that's great, but you need to look at it at the same time. You need to manage it concurrently. You need to have a look at both sides of the innovation, the exploitative and the explorative.
As a question to you, do you think these should be kept separate? Because there's lots of arguments that these things should be separate and distinct units of activity. Or do you think that has its pitfalls and problems?
Yes, I definitely think that it should be kept separate. Not kept separate like in a Fort Knox setting. So there are some models out there where companies are sending staff from, let's call it the core organization, the exploitative organization, into those innovation centers for a limited period of time, and then taking them back also to serve as innovation evangelist or catalyst, whatever you'd like to call it. But if you dive deeper into that, Paul, you will recognize that in the explorative setting, you have different people in order to make it happen. They are working with unusual partners. They have different KPIs. It's also that they need to have some sort of entrepreneurial freedom from corporate processes. Think about contracting with a partner that they think is relevant for what they are up to. And if you basically have this fully integrated into the, let's call it, day-to-day business, this will simply not work. They will run into brick walls coming from the culture, from the KPIs, etc.
But this becomes, again, part of the innovation dilemma, or part of the dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly.
The more you separate, the more they lose identification between each other.
Yes.
And suddenly a big idea is taken back into the core, and the core, you know, doesn't feed off it to develop it. It kills it. The antibodies kick in. How do you Is there anything that you've come across, you think, oh, that's really cool, that's very neat, like a linkage which will keep the two sides connected somehow or other? Is there any thought you have there?
Yes, definitely. So first of all, this is exactly why Ralph Oren, I think there is a need today in setting up this dual innovation approach, exactly for the reason that you mentioned. And I mean, what we did in order to frame it is to say, well, we do have the exploitative world. We already talked about that. We do have the explorative world. Consider this to be two disjoint and disconnected playing fields of innovation. And now you really need to shape what is in between a horizon two. I think we'll touch on that later on. Yeah. And what you find in there are two major activities. On the one side, it's the, we call it adaptation of those big ideas in order to make it digestible for the core organization. There are several ways to do that. But you also find, that's basically the second thing going on, the adaptation of the core business. So think about a financial services company. Now, with all those digital companies, digital technologies coming in, certainly their core business in 5 years will be quite different from today. So they will have robo-advisors, and there's a high automation of transactions governed by blockchain, etc., etc. So they also need to develop their core business to adapt it for the digital age. And these two things, basically adaptation of the core business and also the adaptation, or we call it scaling up, of those big innovation ideas so they become part of the core organization. These are the two things happening in the middle ground, which is basically the key ground for making sure that the current business is future-proof, and also making sure that these new, bold, big, great ideas, potentially even disrupting ideas, are basically made part of the company's operating model.
So from what I'm hearing from you, what you're trying to make it really distinctive here, which is, if people take on the mindset, I'm going to explore, I'm going to exploit, it can have its constraints. What you're promoting, far more within your thinking, is no, have a dual frame, understand that dual frame of thinking, that dual way of operating, because even in your core business, you've got to explore, you've got to exploit, because there's so many things coming towards you. So don't lose out, because so yes, there is separation, but at the same time, you've got to balance it out in a dual way, as against define it out in explore.
Okay. Fully agree.
A question: What organizations would you point people towards that could be a good example of this dual or this explore and exploiting?
From the discussions that I lead, Paul, and some of the stories I'm also sharing on my LinkedIn account, in particular relating to a peer group of fine companies of global leaders that all share those this very pain point, how to establish this dual innovation mode. I would say that a solid good practice would be Robert Bosch, the German engineering company. So what they did is they do have their core business, and they set aside, also physically aside, a startup incorporation where people from the inside of the organization might be joined by some startups outside of the core, but obviously with access to corporate resources, drive the ideas to a certain point where it could be transferred back to core business. And then also these people then either move on, or what the statistics tell you, they go back to the Robert Bosch core organization in a different role and with a higher appreciation of those entrepreneurial things that they learned along the way.
Another one I thought had a very distinctive approach, which of course was Google with its Alphabet, where, you know, because Google has separated out its moonshots, its companies that are into very, very experimental, very mentally, potentially very big organizational activities, they've separated it away from the core, but they've really ring-fenced it. They've really made it independent. But it's a very good example of saying, well, where there's an exploit, where there explore, that you could get a good sense of it. I mean, they keep changing that because obviously of funding and everything else. But I think your example of Robert Bosch is one good one. Another possible one is, I say, Alphabet and Google, for people to begin to explore. Any other one that comes immediately to mind?
In certain aspects, you find a lot of good practices. So, for instance, I think BP is also a very good practice when it comes to connecting ventures, which could be external ventures, joint ventures, or incubated ventures with corporate resources. This is, in my view, the good practice. But I would like one comment about Google and the Alphabet. First of all, yes, I'm fully with you regarding the setup. Question mark I have, what did really come out of that? Where I see that Google makes tractions, for instance, in the health market, is where they say, well, we partner, we set up joint ventures with, say, the established companies from this industry. They have got this vehicle called Calico, where they funnel a lot of things in there. But the Google moonshots, I mean, it remains to be seen what the real business impact of those explorative activities is. And at the end of the day, Paul, this is the measure for innovation success. What's the business impact?